Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lindenville, we are here when you need us.
And now WDEV-FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. A lot going on, so I want to dedicate the first 45 minutes or so to talk about some of the issues that are happening here in both the state and nationally. First up, it's an interesting sort of twist on an election. It's a lieutenant governor's race where David Zuckerman, the progressive Democratic candidate for governor, made what many say was a major mistake when at a anti-F-35 rally in 2013, he seemed to cross the line and criticize the Vermont Air National Guard and its role in protecting New York City after 9/11. The question I have, is this a grave mistake for him? Is it a game changer for the lieutenant governor's race, or is it no big deal? We'll play the clip in just a moment. Then today, the Green Mountain Care Board, the Vermont Green Mountain Care Board, in all likelihood will approve the waiver with the federal government that will lead Vermont to adopt what is commonly called an all-payer model of health care. This new model is basically changing the way payment is made. The all-payer model changes how providers are paid from the current fee for service, where the providers are paid or reimbursed for each service they provide, to one where they would get a global budget for a patient, for example. They get a lump sum for a patient and require to manage the health of the population to that budget number. It has several advantages. We'll discuss those in a minute. But given that the premiums under Obamacare are increasing on average 25%, over 100% in some states, and there's still problems with the Vermont Health Connect, here's my question. Do you have concerns with what's going on with health care in Vermont? And more bank mergers in Vermont. We have the Mergents merging with Community Bank in New York. Community banking in New York. Is bigger better, or has the banking system left us? As one caller said yesterday, or a few days ago, her bank didn't leave her. She never left her bank. The bank left her. And more layoffs at the Burlington Free Press in combination with the sale of the Rutland Herald. Is the newsprint business seems to be struggling. Where do you get your news, and are you satisfied with how you get your news? Finally, if Donald Trump loses, what does the Republican Party have to do to regroup? We'll discuss those and other issues that may come up during our conversation. Then joining us this morning in the last part of this hour will be Kyle Madura, WCAX reporter, on the latest WCAX polls. And then Katie Falcone will join us in studio. She co-founded an effort. It's called Rad Girls Club. And this organization, it is, the RAD stands for the Redemption of Adorable Dogs. And we'll talk to Katie about what the Rad Girls Club does. And then we'll check in with what's happening at the Paramount Theater in Rutland. There's a lot happening down there. And we'll speak with Executive Director Bruce Bouchard about those happenings. And of course, we'll check in with our colleagues at Talk Media News. Anytime you want to call in, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. First talk about David Zuckerman. And this is what he said in 2013 in opposition to the F-35s.
And then there's a discussion that some of the people that support F-35 say, this is about our safety and our freedom. Look what they did on 9/11. When I look at what our planes did on 9/11, they flew over a site that was already devastated by a terrorist action. I don't believe they stopped a single thing from happening. So let's not equate their existence with freedom when they're after the fact.
Some have claimed that he went further than just opposing the F-35s. He was actually opposing the job that the Vermont Air National Guard was doing when he criticized the efforts of the Guard after 9/11. And if you heard the chief of police talk about that time right after 9/11, what he was talking about is seeing the security of those F-16s above New York and giving some sort of condolences to or comfort, not comfort, to the citizens or the residents of New York City that there was protection above them to protect them against future attacks. So was David Zuckerman going too far in his criticism of the Vermont National Guard when he was talking F-35s? It has blown up on the campaign trail in terms of people talking about it, be interested in your opinion on it. Now, David Zuckerman has since apologized for those remarks. Those remarks are now coming to light of something he said in 2013. But is this a game changer for the election? This isn't the first time David Zuckerman has been called out on what he has said. Randy Brock has called his opponent, his Republican opponent. Randy Brock is African-American, has called him out and accused him of being insensitive to people of color. So is this a game changer for David Zuckerman, or is it not a big deal? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Tom, I want to play that clip one more time. If you would just rack it up, and we'll play it one more time so you get an idea of what was said and the controversy. Are you we're racking it up as we go. Tom, play the clip one more time.
And then there's a discussion that some of the people that support F-35 say this is about our safety and our freedom. Look what they did on 9/11. When I look at what our planes did on 9/11, they flew over a site that was already devastated by a terrorist action. I don't believe they stopped a single thing from happening. So let's not equate their existence with freedom when they're after the fact.
So did David Zuckerman go over the line? That's our question today as we come out of the blocks. 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Did he go over the line in sort of his opposition to the F-35s? Some people believe he is actually stepped over the line because he's criticizing the Vermont Air National Guard's attempts to secure New York City right after 9/11. And as I said, many people believe that they had a critical role right after 9/11. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. If you have an opinion about David Zuckerman and his comments about the Air National Guard. I just want to, you know, while Tom's taking some phone calls here, what I'll do is I saw this. Actually, this was given to me, and it's quite amazing. The ticket prices for the World Series. For the four games in Cleveland, the average price of a ticket is nearly $3,500. For the three games in Chicago, the average price is over $6,600, making it the most expensive World Series in history. Let's just put this in perspective a little bit. The Cubs won their last World Series in 1908, and the ticket price of the World Series grandstand seat was $1.25, and a gallon of gas was 2 cents. Boy, that's a long time ago. So our question, did David Zuckerman step over the line with his comments about the Vermont Air National Guard? Let's go to Steve in Morgan, Vermont. Steve, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I am fine, thank you.
Good. First time caller here, but I have to say, you know, they're flexing their muscles when they flew over. That's a fact, and that's okay. They were not doing anything essential. And that was a criticism of, it was not a criticism of the National Guard. I think it was a description of what happened. And you know as well as a lot of Vermonters that there's a lot of disagreement about the F-35. There have been problems with the airplane, problems with its location, etc. So, I don't see it as a criticism of the National Guard at all. I see it as a factual statement. And I'll just take your response or other comments on the radio here. Thanks a lot.
Well, Steve, thank you for your call. What I was trying to do is generate some opinions here, and you certainly don't think it was a big comment or a misstep at all. It's just a statement of fact. Thanks for your phone call. Let's go to John in Barrie. What do you think about David Zuckerman's comments, John?
Well, it's not necessarily just the comments he made about the airplanes. It's just that I have a hard time with a lot of stuff he's done, like the whole brown bagging and getting, you know, his, what, $60 a day? That's $300 a week. Where did that go?
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I have problems with him is he's got that farm. It's he's got a bunch of migrants who work there, I think, because I looked at somebody downloaded the application for living there. If you look at the application, he says housing involved and also you can eat from the vegetables that they get out of the farm, but it's a 3-bedroom mobile home. Who's going to share that? I'd be disgusted if he ends up becoming a governor at some point, because anybody who's got hair can grow a ponytail and be a farmer in Vermont. You know, you can raise chickens on your back lawn. So I don't trust him. I just don't trust him.
Thanks, John, for your phone call. What we're talking about today is David Zuckerman and his comments in 2013 in opposition to the F-35s. It's not the opposition to the F-35 that's drawing criticism, although I'm sure that draws criticism as well. But it is his statements afterwards. Obviously, he went further, and most people are interpreting this to mean that he was criticizing the Vermont Air National Guard in their efforts on guarding New York City after 9/11. And of course, this has drawn some sharp rebuke from other people. He's apologized for these remarks. I want to give him I want to make sure you understand that he's apologized for these remarks. We'll talk to WCAX in a moment about their latest poll in terms of this race. But is this a game changer for the election? Or is this no big deal? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Jerry in Berlin. Jerry, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hi, really quick. I don't mind his objection to the F-35s.
Yep.
And we all know that you're pro-military, and basically so am I. But what I do object to is any objection to our men and women that serve our country.
Mm-hmm. So you think he went too far on this one?
I think he's going too far on a lot of things. It has nothing to do. I had a ponytail for 10 years of my life. It has nothing to do with that. If we're basing things on ponytails and grabbing women in this country or emails, then come on. Where have we come? What have we come to?
You're absolutely right, Jerry. We'll talk about that in a little while. Thanks, Jerry. Let's go to Mike in Northfield. Mike, you're on open mic and wondering if David Zuckerman went too far in his comments.
No. You know what? Whatever he said, it's fine with me. The Pentagon is to blame for everything. Look at what they've done with their budgets. I mean, it's way more than 50% of our budget. And now they want to take it back from the National Guard guys who reenlisted for a bonus. This is what you should be talking about, in my opinion. This is outrageous. These guys put their lives on the line, and yet we've got executives with big, huge bonuses on failed banks, and we had to pay those. Come on, Mike, get on the ball and get a topic that's really worth discussing.
Interesting topic, Mike. Thank you for your phone call. Of course, what Mike is talking about is in California, the National Guard. Some National Guard members during sign up during the Iraq and Afghanistan war got bonuses. And now the Pentagon is trying to get those bonuses back. It seems to me this has caused a huge uproar. And Mike is right. He has a point here. It is... What are they thinking on this? These men and women put their lives on the line. Why are we going after bonuses that the Pentagon sort of doled out wrongly? Is it their fault? Which is interesting, to say the least. And also, you know, Mike brings up a good point, and I want to get to that at some point. Banking in the United States. We had, you know, the failed banks of 2008. And then the question is, with all these mergers, with all everything that's going on in banking, is it good or is it bad? Wells Fargo, for example. But the question I'm trying to get to this morning is David Zuckerman. He said in 2013, in opposition to the F-35s, went a little bit further than people thought he should go. He seemed to criticize the Vermont Air National Guard for its efforts of guarding the airspace on 9/11 over New York City. Let's go to Elizabeth in Berlin. Elizabeth, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. So I think that what David Zuckerman did was miss the point. The Air Guard was ready to protect New York City. When they were called out, they had no idea what they were going to come to, and they had to be ready. And that's sort of the whole point of the Guard, is to have a force in readiness in case there's a problem. Fortunately, there wasn't an additional problem on 9/11, but there could have been, and I think we should all remember that.
Thanks, Elizabeth, for your phone call. Let's go to Matt in Williston. Matt, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Thanks, Mike. There's a couple points. First, if he's going to comment, he should get all the details before he speaks publicly on a topic. Kind of shoot from the hip. The next issue is, if he's talking F-35, then he should have a discussion with Senator Patrick Leahy, who endorsed him, and Senator Sanders, because they're the ones in the Congress that sign the spending bills that make programs like this possible, not you and me, not the people down on Church Street. Now, we're going to get a chance here to elect somebody else, or we can elect more of the same. And I think that's another point that it gets back to, is we need to look at how long people are in office and what kind of decisions they're making and how it affects us personally. Thanks.
Hey, Matt, are you still there?
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, what did you think? Did you think his comments... I get about the F-35, that Senator Sanders, Congressman Welch, Senator Leahy all support the F-35. But did you think his comments went too far, and did it sort of criticize the Vermont Air National Guard? What was your opinion?
Definitely. And just like, you know, the Guard, like any other military person, but we follow the orders that are based on our civilian authority. And that comes, you know, from the National Command Structure, you know, down to those guys. They're doing their job. They're doing what our nation, our elected leaders ask them. So to criticize them, you're off base. Criticize those that say yes to the F-35. Criticize those that made the decision, you know, to do that. The other piece is, it's easy to look back with, you know, with 2020 vision and realize nothing was coming. But when people were flying airplanes into the World Trade Center, into the Pentagon, and then crash landed to avert further catastrophe, you know, those guys are up there, like a previous caller said, doing their job and making sure that we maintain our safety and security.
Thanks, Matt, for your phone call. What we're discussing this morning is David Zuckerman in 2013. He went beyond, according to many people, beyond his opposition of the F-35s and talked about Vermont's Air National Guard role over New York City. And I want to play that clip just one more time so you that you understand what he said. He has since apologized. But many are saying that his criticism actually missed the point. It was criticizing the Vermont Air National Guard for their efforts to guard New York City after 9/11. Tom, could you play that clip one more time?
And then there's a discussion that some of the people that support F-35 say, this is about our safety and our freedom. Look what they did on 9/11. When I look at what our planes did on 9/11, they flew over a site that was already devastated by a terrorist action. I don't believe they stopped a single thing from happening. So let's not equate their existence with freedom when they're after the fact.
What is being criticized is a couple of things and a couple of things that the caller brought up. At that time, no one knew what was going on at that point, whether there was another plane going on. But our men and women in the Air National Guard were there to protect New York City. And if you go back and talk to people who were on the ground during that time, including the chief of police of Burlington, recognizing that having air cover by the Air National Guard gave comfort to people in New York City. So what do you think? Do you think David Zuckerman went too far in his comments? And secondly, is this a game changer for you? Are these comments a game changer in the vote with 13 days to go before the election? Let's go to Matt in Montpelier. Matt, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to kind of point out that on 9/11, the Vermont Air National Guard, they were the first unit in the entire United States in the air with live-loaded aircraft when everything started hitting the fan. They that day were escorting down airplanes that were not answering the call to land. Nobody knew what was going on, and the men and women flying those airplanes had orders from the Pentagon to shoot down airplanes if they needed to, and they had pilots that weren't answering radios, but they never did actually shoot anybody down, but the orders were there. They played a major role in the 9/11 events, getting everything to a safe situation. And in the days since then, they've run two alert stations, one down in Langley, Virginia, and one up here in Vermont for several years, with live-loaded aircraft in case something like that has happened again. And they have done many combat air patrols and escort missions where Russian bears would come across the ocean and come right up to our
those are bomber aircraft you're talking about, right?
Yeah, they would come on their way to Cuba, and they would come over and then fly right along the coast just outside of the area, and our F-16s would have to go out and escort them to make sure they weren't coming across into our zone. So they play a major, vital role in the defense of this nation. I just kind of want to point those facts out.
Thanks, Matt, for your phone call. We're talking about David Zuckerman and his comments about the Vermont Air National Guard seemingly criticizing the efforts of the Guard after 9/11. Played the clip three times. Don't need to play it again. Taking your calls at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Gary in Georgia. Gary, you're on open mic.
Good morning. The only thing I can say is Zuckerman should sit down with Brian Doobie for a little education, and then he can talk about about the Guard. But I think that's an awful statement he made.
Thanks, Gary. The question is, will it be a game changer? I mean, most polls have David Zuckerman up right now. Will this be a game changer in the election? What he said about the men and women of the Vermont Air National Guard. Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Morning. Hey, you know what the problem with this, the FITS or the National Guard thing up in Vermont is? People don't even know what the mission of the National Guard is. Is it coastal air defense? Is it northern border air defense? Or is it to reinforce NATO? What's the mission? Nobody knows.
Isn't it an evolving mission? I mean, obviously it's for national defense here at home and abroad, but isn't it an evolving sort of mission? The Vermont National Guard, whether it's the Air National Guard, whether it's the Army up there, you know, they have been deployed. They've been deployed to Afghanistan. The Vermont Air National Guard has been deployed all around the world, including the Middle East. Isn't it, depending on what the needs are of the Army, Air Force, and, well, not in this case, Navy, but Army and Air Force, doesn't it sort of, isn't it flexible and in flux, Fred?
My guess is it's mission. All you have to do is just call a commander up, and he'll tell you what the mission is. My guess is the mission is to reinforce NATO. I don't think its mission is to a coastal defense mission. I don't think it's that, or even a northern. It might be a northern border one, but I doubt that too.
Yeah, Fred, but they do scramble for what the gentleman just talked about in terms of Russian aircraft coming near to our airspace. They do scramble for the northern sort of northeast quadrant of the United States. So, Fred, thank you for your phone call. When we come back, more of your phone calls. Did David Zuckerman go too far in criticizing the Vermont Air National Guard for their efforts to guard New York City after 9/11. But the big question, for me at least, is this a game changer for the election, or is this no big deal? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We have quite a number of phone calls on this subject, and the subject we're talking about is David Zuckerman. And in 2013, at a rally where he was opposing the F-35s, many believe that he went further than he should have and started to criticize the Vermont Air National Guard for its efforts in New York City after 9/11. Let's hear the clip, and then let's get your response.
And then there's a discussion that some of the people that support F-35 say, this is about our safety and our freedom. Look what they did on 9/11. When I look at what our planes did on 9/11, they flew over a site that was already devastated by a terrorist action. I don't believe they stopped a single thing from happening. So let's not equate their existence with freedom when they're after the fact.
Now, the criticism is that nobody knew what was going on in 9/11, and certainly the guard planes, the F-16s, were deployed to protect New York City because nobody knew whether there was going to be another attack. And secondly, people in New York City felt comfort in knowing that those F-16s were above the city. So the question is this a game changer for the election? Polls are showing that David Zuckerman is ahead. It seems to be closing if you look at the WCAX poll. But is this a game changer for the election, or is this just no big deal? Let's go to Peter in Montpelier. Peter, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I just have to say, I think these remarks are a little bit out of context. Dave Zuckerman seems to be a real good guy, in my opinion. He's done a lot for farmers and for working people, and I think he really cares about Vermont. So to me, this is not a game changer, and I'm still happy to go out there and support Dave Zuckerman. So thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Peter, for your phone call. Let's go to Bill in Barrie. Bill, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mike. First of all, it isn't a game changer for me because when Randy Brock was on your show, I was very, very impressed. My thoughts were he's a class act, so it's not changing my vote because I'm voting for him. But why I'm calling is for those pilots. When those pilots headed for New York, they were flying in their own minds into danger. They didn't know what they were going to have to do. And I can't think of anything worse than being ordered to shoot down a plane with innocent people in it, but you had to save somebody. So that is something those guys have to be commended, and I put them up the same bravery as those firemen and those policemen who ran towards the Trade Center, because all of these people that go to help their fellow man is doing it, and they are afraid. There's no question about fear. A military person, as you know, you are afraid. You just have to overcome that and do what you have to do. So I'm really calling for those pilots and for anybody else who serves this country to defend us.
Thanks, Bill, for your phone call. Let's go to Sam in Williston. Sam, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yeah, a game changer. It kind of blows me away that we're even speaking game changer with when you have the capabilities of Randy Rock up against somebody I believe who's packaged himself as the perfect candidate on top of the John Deere and all. I remember back in the 60s going to an anti-war rally with the likes of Jerry Rubin there. They whipped out the Viet Cong flag, and that's when I got up and left. I was against the war, but my brother was there fighting there, and all of a sudden I saw people turn on my brother. I feel this is a turn on my brother when you diminish what somebody who's putting their life on the line for, what they're doing. Those guys could have crashed going up into the air. There didn't have to be anybody there to shoot them down or anything. They didn't know what they were going. They went and did what they had to do because their country asked them to. And I feel that's something that's been looked down upon about some of these people of David's group, I would say.
Thanks, Sam, for your phone call. Let's go to Paul in Moncton. Paul, you're on open mic.
Question that needs to be asked is this. After the attacks and during the wars over the Middle East, Afghanistan, a lot of people came out that I fully respect for opposing the war but claiming to support our troops, something I found difficult for people to do, but they claimed they were able to, and I respect them for that. This calls into question, though, whether David Zuckerman does respect and feel positive about our troops, because those comments weren't directed at the planes. They were directed at the people who flew them, I think, to some extent, and I think it's reasonable to question them on it and ask them to quantify or qualify his views.
Let me ask you this, Paul, because I'm curious. In Vietnam, obviously, I think we made a mistake in criticizing the troops that were there and not the policy. But nonetheless, I thought people had a duty in Vietnam, whether they were for the war or against the war. Now, they could have been drafted, and that wasn't their choice during Vietnam. They could have enlisted, which would have been their choice, or they could oppose the war. I do not have any sort of ill feelings against anybody that served. I was in the military during that time, but I have not ill feelings for anybody that opposed that war. Do you?
No, not at all, and any more than I had ill feelings to anybody who opposed the wars in the Middle East or any war. I mean, there isn't anybody connected to the military in this country that I know of. I'm sure there are, but no, that I know of that liked the idea of war.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, I got brought up in a military family. My father was Democrat, and he didn't feel too comfortable with people who escaped and ran from it. But the reality is, I think they showed bravery in doing what they did, based upon their beliefs, the same way the people who fly our planes on the Air Guard. And I think it's okay to debate whether or not the planes or the new F-35s are necessary based upon many different things, the noise, the cost, their ability to work properly. But the reality is the comments that David Zuckerman made went a little bit further than that, and that puts into question whether or not he truly does respect our Air Guard, and he may be in a position, if he's lieutenant governor, to have some control over them. And I think it's reasonable for people to question it.
Paul, thank you so much for your call. Great discussion this morning. Coming up, we'll talk with Kyle Madura. We'll talk about the WCAX polls, which are interesting, to say the least. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're getting jammed with phone calls on the issue of David Zuckerman. I have to move on to other guests that we have already set up on this, but I will try to figure out how to get back to this subject probably tomorrow, because we have callers calling in all over the place on this subject. But I do want to introduce to you Kyle Madura, WCAX reporter, and good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me, and feel free to bump me at any time for more interesting material.
This is interesting, what we're going to be talking about. And what we're going to be talking about today is the poll, well, several polls that you've done at WCAX. Let's start with the governor's race. Actually, Kyle, let's back up a little bit. The poll was conducted when and how many people approximately were interviewed for this poll?
So the poll took place between Thursday and Saturday. So it began Thursday and wrapped up, I believe, in the evening of Saturday. 603 registered and likely voters took place in the poll and helped give us an idea of the feeling out there in Vermont.
So let's start with the governor's race. What did your poll reveal, and what did the pollster say about what was going on?
So the poll does have a just about exactly 4% margin of error, 3.99% if you want to be really technical. And it shows Phil Scott, the Republican, with a 7-point lead over Democrat Sue Minter. And so that is a 47-40 split. Now, what the pollster said, and he raised some interesting things we haven't heard before, looking at some of the more in-depth data breakdowns on, you know, Democrats vote looking at Scott or Republicans not looking at Scott. But as you really tear apart the data, he suggested that it's possible that Hillary Clinton at the top of the ticket may be actually dampening some of Minter's support, much in the way that many of us expected Donald Trump to potentially hold back candidates like Phil Scott all across the nation. So that was perhaps the most interesting thing that he read into the data when we chatted with him. Some of the other impacts, he said, certainly the poll came at a good time for Phil Scott, coming off a strong debate here at WCAX that many suggested may have been a win for him. And then the other element that might really have helped Scott in this poll is that the polling time did not totally encapsulate Sue Minter's whirlwind tour with Bernie Sanders at her side, with Leahy at her side, trumpeting her candidacy. So definitely came at a good time for Scott's numbers. And that might be part of the reason why we see such a significant difference between this poll and the VPR poll. The other thing to note is with the VPR poll, it was in the field for a full 2 weeks. So some of the elements of that poll may have been lagging behind a little bit compared to our really brief snapshot.
What I think I said to you was that I was surprised in the VPR poll of the number of undecideds at 14%. Your poll had 6%. That seems about right with about 13 days to go in the general election. What? Let's turn to the Senate race, the U.S. Senate race. What did your poll find there?
Well, for the U.S. Senate race, not really much of a surprise for many of us who follow this race closely. And our figures were largely in line with what VPR found in its earlier poll. And that was 64% in favor of Patrick Leahy, 29% for Scott Noem.
And did your pollster have anything to say about this poll?
When I interviewed him, we were chatting solely about the governor's race, so I haven't spoken with him specifically about that race. But he did briefly say, as a tangential answer to one of my other questions about the governor's race, that, you know, this is a pretty typical Leahy number. Many may have thought that this might be a little bit closer than in years past, given the surprise Scott Noem gave Governor Peter Shumlin in 2014 in the gubernatorial race, but I think that was a much different political situation on the ground here in Vermont given some of what they were dealing with at the time with Health Connect. Even some had been mentioning the Jerry Dodge situation. There is an EB-5 issue hanging out there that Milam has tried to say is an indication of Leahy's need to go, but I don't think that the public is buying that case like they did in 2014. And frankly, with EPO, many people thought they were safe to lodge a protest vote, and it came much closer than many would have anticipated. So perhaps some are wary of doing that this go round.
Yeah, I think Scott Milam was also banking on, although he doesn't say it, banking on the disenfranchisement of Bernie supporters, really mad at Leahy for supporting Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders, but that doesn't appear to be happening in this poll at all.
No, we can't see that here. And again, that was the suggestion, perhaps in the gubernatorial poll from our pollster, that perhaps some anger at Hillary Clinton, given the way that things played out between her and Sanders, might be impacting Minter's chances here in the governor's race. I think it's an interesting thought. I don't know that we've got the data to fully back that up.
Now, the lieutenant governor's race, which we've been talking about this morning, which has turned a little bit in terms of controversy on something that David Zuckerman said in 2013. But this poll was done before the revelation of these comments that he said in 2013. What did you find in that poll?
So that poll puts Zuckerman in the lead 49-35, which is, again, the margin of error here is 4%. So that's a pretty substantial lead, at least it appears to be. That is also fairly close to what VPR found in that instance. So this did occur before some other media outlets held debates in the lieutenant governor's race, so that could have moved the needle. And obviously, the comments from 2013 might shift the race. But if the polls are in the right ballpark, Mr. Brock is going to need quite the comeback to make this one close.
And if you're a lawyer, you should never ask a question you don't know the answer to. But are you having – I don't know the answer to this. Are you having the lieutenant governor – candidates on your program, or have you had them on?
We are going to have them on the 30 to discuss the differences between their candidacies, but we are not going to have a full-fledged special debate in the way that we did for the gubernatorial race, where we spent an hour really diving into the details in a completely different format. This will be as part of our regular 30 programming. I believe that date is November 2nd, but don't quote me on that.
And does CAX have more poll results coming out?
We do have numbers on issues that Vermonters believe are the most important for our next governor to address. We also have numbers on the presidential race here in Vermont that are yet to come. Might be a few more that I'm forgetting, but those are really the big ticket items that we have yet to reveal.
Let me predict what your poll says about the presidential election. Hillary Clinton is ahead here in Vermont.
Yes, I think it's safe to say we might have raised an eyebrow or two if that weren't the case. But, you know, we'll get into just how big that divide is. And obviously we'll account for other candidates as well, which can be the interesting part of this. That many people, myself included, were actually surprised that in the VPR poll, Bernie Sanders was only polling about 4%. I think I would have expected that number might have actually been a little bit higher. But you'll have to wait to see what ours found.
Great tease. Thank you so much, Kyle, for joining us this morning.
Absolutely, Mike. Have a great day.
Same to you. Kyle Madura, WCAX reporter, talking about the poll results that have been released so far and the poll results that are coming. He raises a good point, which is something that I really thought that the VPR poll, a couple of things with the VPR poll. One, I thought the undecideds were too high. And number two, I thought the Bernie Sanders impact for president was a little bit too low. But we'll find out whether we're right or wrong when the WCAX poll comes out. And you use these polls, by the way, to get a snapshot, to get a judgment of where you are. You use one poll and use the other and try to figure out what is going on. Coming up in the second half of our program, Talk Media News, and we'll be talking about national political events and other events that are happening nationally. Katie Falcone will join us, and she's going to be talking about Rad Girls Club. That's a redemption for adoptable dogs. Redemption for Adoptable Dogs Girls Club. And then Bruce Bouchard, executive director of the Paramount Theater. He will be calling in and talking about happenings at the Paramount. Boy, the Paramount, what a wonderful theater. The Flynn is a wonderful theater. We have the Barry Opera House. What wonderful theaters we have in Vermont. And certainly the Paramount has undergone sort of a renaissance. And want to talk about that and Vermont theater in general. And, of course, if you want to listen to this broadcast over again or have missed portions of this broadcast, we know you're busy during the day, you can always go to WDEVradio.com and click on the Open Mic Podcast and listen to any portion of this program at any time at your convenience. So talk media news, and then we'll talk about Rad Dogs, and we'll talk about the Paramount Theater. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. Hey, we have a glorious past, but we're celebrating the future. You're listening to WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, 98.3 FM from Montpelier, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. As I said, you can click on that website, get to the Open Mic Podcast, and listen anytime. This is Mike Smith. Be right back. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. On the line is our good friend and colleague, Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning to you. Well, we've got 13 days before the election, and, you know, I'm a liberal loony. I was a Bernie person, et cetera, but I'm afraid Trump's going to win. Everybody thinks I'm completely insane, but I have to remind them of the 1980 election when Jimmy Carter was up 2 weeks before, and he was up 7 points, and Ronald Reagan won.
That's it. You're stunned me, Ellen, with your prediction here. Why do you think that's happening?
I've always been wrong on predictions, so whatever.
what do you think? Wait, what's driving your prediction? Is it just you got
a
feeling?
Driving my prediction is that people are going in the voting booth. They say, "Oh, we don't really like Hillary Clinton." They vote for Trump, and they come out of the voting booth, and they tell the poll watchers that they voted for Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that people, you know, have this we don't like politics feeling this year, just like the Brexit vote in England.
Right. And you know what's interesting is that, and Hillary Clinton has had trouble doing that, she can't shake, and Bernie Sanders put this tag on her, she can't shake sort of the status quo image.
No, that is definitely a problem. She, you know, no matter what she does, she's always tainted with the Clinton administration from a long time ago. I mean, they left office 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, she cannot shake that, and that's really too bad. Plus, she's been a senator. She's been a secretary of state. So they consider her just part of Washington, and people want it's an anti-Washington year, just like it was an anti-European Union year and at the Brexit vote. And you know, people are not. Who was it, P.T. Barnum or J.L. Mencken? I can't remember which. Said no one ever went broke underestimating the taste of the American public.
Some of the things that Donald Trump, if he seizes on them, there's some issues going in his favor. Obamacare premium increases, for example, National Guard bonuses, which is a mess out in California with the
Well, you know, it's interesting. I spoke with a National Guard member who is a police officer, and he said he was guaranteed something like $30,000 if he reenlisted. He went to Iraq. He did all that kind of stuff. And he held on to his papers for the 7 years that most of us are required to hold on to our checks and taxes. And then after that, he figured he was fine, so he got rid of it, and now they're saying they want to see his paperwork. Well, President Obama could, under executive order, say these guys are home free. 20,000 or 30,000 is a lot to a service member, it may not be a lot to the federal government.
Right, and what do you think is going to be happening? I mean, the president has told the Secretary of Defense to rectify this, to find a way to expedite it. It seems like it's becoming more and more of an issue every day, so I suspect they want to get this off the front pages.
Well, they certainly want to get it off the front pages before the election. There's no question about that.
And Obamacare has been taking a hit because in states, the average cost of premiums are going up 25%. And if you look at individual states, in Arizona, for the second cheapest silver plan, which is basically what everybody buys, the premiums are going up 116%, in Oklahoma 69%, in Tennessee 63%, and Minnesota in 59%.
Well, my Tennessee host told me they've got one provider in the whole state right now.
And that is what a lot of these states have. Arizona, for example, one provider is what I'm hearing. And that is something, will the Republicans seize on that as well in the final 13 days?
Well, I think they're going to seize on whatever they possibly can, for sure. But, you know, Bernie Sanders talked about a single-payer system, and they certainly have that in other places. There's been a lot of criticism about it, but there's a lot of criticism about rationing health care in our country. So I'm not so sure. But, you know, Bernie Sanders may be right.
Let me ask you this, Ellen, because I've been curious about this, and I asked Bob yesterday, but these WikiLeaks emails, is there anything that the Clinton campaign has to be worried about in this?
You know, I have to tell you, look, this is talk about from staffers. If we were to somehow see the Donald Trump emails, they would look exactly alike. Those of us in Washington, the reason you're getting a ho-hum reaction from the press in Washington is this is what we expect. This is the kind of thing that does not surprise us.
What else is going on in our...
Okay, well, we have Mosul, and what's happening there, a New York Times reporter actually... their convoy got hit, and they write about it in the New York Times today. It's a very serious problem because what's happened is ISIL has dug tunnels, they're using landmines, and they're trying to prevent Mosul from being retaken, and this is going to be a long fight. So that is certainly one of the huge issues that we are seeing going on. It looks like there has been, as you know, there were all these protests and take over the Oregon Wildlife Refuge, and it looks like there may be a partial verdict, but on all of those kinds of things, all of that can go all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is in session, but being that they only have 8 justices, they're trying not to be very controversial.
And this is where, in Oregon, where a group took over the wildlife refuge, and actually the FBI sort of recaptured it, and one their leader was killed, I think, in that.
That's right.
Here's a issue that I just don't know a lot about, the Iran Sanction Act. It's up in Congress. Is it controversial, and why is it controversial?
Well, the fact is that this has to do with whether we're going to continue sanctions for them or against the government. Now, nothing is really going to happen until, of course, Congress comes back in a lame duck session. So this is just speculation by the press. Because we don't know what they're going to do. And, of course, it depends on the outcome of the election as to what they do at all.
Do you think, this is sort of my last question, but it popped in my mind when you were talking about the press. Do you think the American people believe, and this is going to be crucial if Donald Trump wins, do you believe they think the press is rigged, the election is rigged and the press is rigging it?
Well, I do think that the American public does not trust the press. And that's too bad. And frankly, the one part about the WikiLeaks, which is not good, is that people were running questions by the staff. We would never do that as a news organization. And I have to say, although I made it to WikiLeaks for my comments on Fox, although they were not pro-Hillary at that point, because I said she needs to have a press conference or the press ought not to cover her. But fortunately, none of our questions, or we don't look like we're sucking up to the either party or whatever, because we don't do that. And neither do you guys.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some press people who do that. And the other thing I fault the press for is if they were invited to private dinners at Podesta's house and a New York a person for Hillary Clinton, they should have reported that. Even if they don't report the contest, they should report that they were invited.
I agree with you, Ellen. Thank you so much for being with us today. That's Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News. Coming up, Katie Falcone, who's this is a really interesting topic. It's called Rad Girls Club, and it's redemption for adoptable dogs. And I'm curious about this organization and what they do, and I hope you are too. Coming up, we'll talk to Katie and also Bruce Bouchard, the executive director of the Paramount Theater in Rutland. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to have in our WDEV studios Katie Falcone. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Katie is the co-founder of an organization called RADS Girls Club, and it's the RAD stands for Redemption for Adoptable Dogs. And I want to talk to you, Katie. Tell us about the RAD Girls Club. Why was it founded?
Well, my girlfriend and I, we both have full-time jobs. We're in our late 20s, but we kind of felt like something was missing, and we wanted to build something that was ours. And I think a lot of people our age feel that way. They want to start something that they can put their name on and be a little creative in their life when they're not working full-time 9-to-5. So we got together, and we thought, what are we passionate about? What can we talk to people about, and what can we build a company around? And we just kind of looked at our rescue dogs and thought, this is the only thing we're passionate about. We love our dogs, and our dogs pretty much saved us because we, you know, have been taking care of them since they were babies. And we had to be responsible. We had to come home, and they really helped us grow up a bit.
Let's go back to that comment that you just made. You obviously adopted a dog.
Yes.
When did you adopt your dog?
When I was in college.
That's unusual.
It is unusual. I was living in Boulder, Colorado, and my friend had adopted her dog from the Boulder Humane Society, which is a wonderful, wonderful facility. And I went with her one day after a long night to go to the vet. And I went into the shelter room, and I was walking around, and I had no intention of getting a dog. I mean, this was not even on my radar. I was so selfish. I was in college. But I saw Nala, my dog now, and she was just staring up at me, and I just had this feeling come over me. And I was never really a huge, huge dog person either. But I had this kind of love at first sight thing, and I didn't leave her side, and she's been with me for 8 years.
What I find fascinating, and I have to ask this question, but you say on your website that you were given numerous chances to redeem yourself, and you wish to do the same for these dogs. Just between us, what were those?
Well, I can't go into details. It wasn't really us. We have both dealt with some darker people in our lives, amazing people, but we've both had a lot of addiction in our lives. Not us personally, but we've been in relationships with people in our families, and we've always been caregivers, and we've always tried to help people in need. Sometimes people don't want your help, and you can't help them unless they want to be helped. But dogs, on the other hand, this is our way of helping the rescue community and trying to bring light and give second chances to adoptable dogs who might need our help.
So let's talk about RAD Girls Club. What is the mission? Can you explain what the mission is of the RAD Girls Club?
Absolutely. So the mission is to bring dogs out for a day. There's so many dogs that need more awareness. There's dogs that have been in the shelter for years, months, and they don't get any airtime, and they don't get to go out and play. And then when they're in the shelter for a long time, they get a stigma. And people think that there's something wrong with them because they've been there for a while, or they're a discriminated breed or a bullied breed, or people just label them. So our mission is to bring a positive light to these dogs. A lot of groups will highlight all the negativity, the dog's sick, the dog's bleeding, the dog's in this cage. Our mission is to bring the dog out of the shelter, highlight all the positive aspects of the dog, bring it out into nature, take beautiful, high-quality photos with our wonderful backdrop of Vermont, go on hikes, and just highlight the positive aspects of this dog and why it is a highly adoptable dog.
How big of a problem is this, that we have so many dogs in the shelters?
it's a pretty big problem. I think of Miami-Dade is a big shelter down in Miami. They have about like 7,000 dogs there at a time, just because it's a big urban community. But I think it's a big problem because people get married, they have kids. Sometimes their kids are allergic to the dog that they have, and they end up giving it away to a shelter. Sometimes somebody can't care for a dog, so they end up giving it away to a shelter or a foster. There's so many different aspects in life. People pass away, people get sick, they can't care for their dogs anymore. So there's so many dogs that are being given up or brought to a shelter, and it's a big problem. And a lot of people will go to a breeder, which is fine, and we, you know, agree with that because it could be a family tradition. But there's so many dogs that are displaced that need a home.
You, one of the things that you talk about passionately is sort of bringing the dogs out, putting them in a positive light. Do you try to connect these dogs with owners?
Absolutely. Yes. So what we do is we promote the dogs on our social media. We bring them out on Church Street. We bring them to storefronts. We go to the Warren store a lot. We partner with different local companies and groups in Vermont because we're very into the support local movement. So we figure we can help them and they can help us by bringing awareness to these dogs and trying to help them find a home. We like to disclose everything that is going on with the dog, if they're good with people, good with other dogs, if they're not maybe good with men, if they're not good with cats or other farm animals. Our biggest goal is to promote them as much as possible so that they can find a home.
And do adoptions of dogs, do they always work, or is it sort of there's sometimes this disconnect?
There's absolutely a disconnect. I think that we like to disclose everything that's going on with the dog. So if there is the dog does have an issue, maybe with another dog or doesn't like to be in public, then we'll probably pair them with somebody who's got a lot of land down in central Vermont or southern Vermont or really anywhere that they're not going to see people a lot or other dogs. And a lot of the time, the shelters have so much to do that they don't really have, they want to just kind of get the dogs out and get them into a home, and it's not a good match. Mm-hmm. And the shelters are wonderful, but they don't really have time to kind of promote these dogs and say, you know, this is what's going on with them. I think they just want to be able to overturn so they can get more dogs in and try and help them get homes as well.
And is that the secret to adopting a dog, is making sure that it matches sort of the criteria that the owners are looking for?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the groups that we work with, for instance, Passion for Paws and Potter's Angels, you have to fill out an application before you're even able to do a meet and greet with a dog. And they're very, very serious about background checks and doing a couple meet and greets and making sure that the dog is okay in their home and comfortable with their other animals. It's kind of a big process, which is great because we don't want these dogs to end up back in a shelter.
Do you have any success stories you can talk about?
Yes, absolutely. Let's see, who's our favorite? Actually, one of the dogs that we have been working with for about 2 months now, his name's Mitch, and he was in a home, and then he was in a shelter for about 18 months. And it was because the family that he was with originally, their child had an allergy to him. So he was in a shelter and he was there for a very long period of time, which is so sad because he's kind of a pit bull looking dog. But he is house trained, potty trained, you know, so good with other dogs and really happy, really well behaved. But for some reason, he wasn't getting adopted. So there's a wonderful foster mom who brought him up, and he's been in Vermont for a few months, and we've been taking him out on day trips, and he's been meeting people, and he was adopted 1 month ago. It didn't work out. That's a story that it didn't work out because the other dog didn't get along with him very well. But now we just found out yesterday that he was adopted. So
great.
Yeah, we're so happy.
Why the name Rad Girls Club?
Well, Rad stands for Redemption for Adoptable Dogs. And girls, it's my partner and I, Chelsea Edson, who started it. And we not only are interested in helping dogs find homes, but we're two women. We're very into women empowerment. And Girls Club is kind of, a sign of that, a way for us to show how much we care about women run groups, I guess.
Is there a rad boys club?
There is not, but boys are definitely, definitely allowed to be part of our club.
Hmm.
We do have a couple of male volunteers. If you're interested, Mike, you're in.
How do you define success?
How do I define success? Successfully placing a dog in a home and hoping that that is a perfect match for that family and for the dog, because families really benefit as much as the dog benefits. I mean, our dog saved us. So if a human can be saved by a dog that they've saved, then that's our number one success story.
You know, as I go on your website, it looks like you have more in mind as to what your vision for RAD is. Can you sort of give us your vision for RAD?
Absolutely. We would like to try and create a line of products that we could sell online for to help fund all of the groups that we work for. So it's going to be a nonprofit. And we want to create jewelry and T-shirts and work with as many companies as we can to try and raise funds for different groups that we work with, foster networks, shelters, and anybody involved in the rescue community.
And on your website, there's some great stories. I mean, Rudder and Tugboat.
Yep.
And, you know, this RJ and those sort of stories. What prompts, does that help? Prompting people looking at that website when you talk about, like, Rudder and Tugboat, for example?
Absolutely. So Rad Girl Rescues, we call them. And we think it's just as important to promote successful rescue stories as much as it is to promote the dogs that are available for adoption.
What do I do if I'm looking for a dog and I want to sort of make sure that I'm connected with the right dog? Is your organization somebody that helps me in that regard?
Absolutely. We can facilitate it. And then once we get some more information about what you're looking for, we can suggest a couple of groups that might be able to help you out in the adoption process. We're like PR for dogs. We're a third party. Because these shelters and these foster networks, they have the biggest job ever. They do everything besides being able to have the time to promote the dogs and take photos of them. So we are taking that job into our own hands.
And as a PR firm for the dogs, when you get to know them, is it better to sell the dog in
Absolutely.
That regard?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's like any sales process. Once you know who the dog is and have spent time with them, you can help better facilitate a home or place them in a better home.
Katie, where can we find more information about Rad Girls Club?
Well, if you want to volunteer with us, we're always looking for people to come on day trips with us, help us every day, make suggestions, send us some Rad Girl Rescue stories that we can post. Go to our website, Rad Girls Club VT. Best way to get in touch with us is follow us on Instagram at Rad Girls Club VT or email us radgirlsvt@gmail.com.
I want to thank you for coming in, Katie Falcone.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Katie Falcone from Rad Girls Club. Coming up, we'll speak with Bruce Bouchard, the executive director of the Paramount Theater in Rutland. As well, if we get a little time, maybe we get some tidbits on some of the stuff that I just didn't get in during the first hour because we had quite a few phone calls. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Upcoming, we'll speak with Bruce Bouchard, the executive director of the Paramount Theater in Rutland. I do want to say that because we had so many phone calls in the first hour on the issue of what Lieutenant Governor candidate David Zuckerman said about the Vermont National Guard, that I will try to find some time tomorrow to make sure that we get all your phone calls in. Those phone calls kept coming and coming and coming, and we will try to get more of those phone calls in tomorrow at some time. And, of course, because of all those phone calls, we didn't get to half the things that we wanted to talk about, that today the Green Mountain Care Board will in all likelihood approve the waiver for the federal government that will leave Vermont to adopt an all-payer model for healthcare. As you know, on this program, we've been talking about healthcare a lot. And the reason we've been talking about healthcare is that it is 20% of our economy and it impacts us all in such a profound way that it is important. So anytime we're changing a system, anytime we're going to a new system, it is an important item to talk about. And any changes in the future are something that we want to talk about. You know, what you've seen nationally just over the last few days is that Obamacare, the premiums will soar 25% on average next year. And that is just, in some states, there's only a single option in terms of the carrier that you can use with Obamacare. And if you look at some of these states and some of the premium increases they are seeing, for example, in Arizona, where the premiums will likely climb by 116%. In Oklahoma, 69%. In Tennessee, 63%. And in Minnesota, 59%. And we all remember good old MIT economist Jonathan Gruber calling the critics of this stupid. And we remember that we, you know, that those that had questions on that were called, you know, the politically motivated. So there has been a wave of insurers that have quit the exchanges. Those that are left are raising deductibles and copays and restricted choices for doctors and hospitals. It's not promising what's happening on a national level. But then again, we've got to look here in Vermont. I mean, the Vermont exchange did not go after, did not go well in terms of how it was implemented. There were many problems. There still are many problems with Vermont Health Connect. And today, the Green Mountain Care Board will bring up the issue of the all-payer model. And if you look at it, you know, like I said, the all-payer model changes the way that doctors and other providers are paid from the current fee-for-service system. That means for each item that the doctor performs, they charge for each item. And it's instead going back or going to a global budget. For example, the doctor or the provider will be given X amount of dollars to care for you. And this system has several advantages, according to advocates. It makes the payment structure to providers less complex. It focuses on preventative health care, and it attempts to ease the administrative burden on providers. And the Joint Fiscal Office, sort of an arm of the legislature, has done an analysis that talks about the benefits and the risk in the all-payer model. You know, they mentioned that it could include better health outcomes and slower growth in health care costs. Perhaps, and they're not saying this, I am, perhaps not the $10 billion over 10 years that Governor Shumlin has promoted. I don't think we're going to see those type of numbers, but it will have some impact on the growth of healthcare, according to advocates. It also noted that the Medicare beneficiaries will retain all the same benefits at a minimum that they currently receive. But they also highlight issues with this, in that its potential to save money in the healthcare system is probably not going to be as profound as people are saying, because there are things outside of this system, of this waiver, like nursing home care and others, that do increase cost pressures. Pharmaceuticals, for example. They also, the JFO, the Joint Fiscal Committee of the legislature, also says that implementing such a transformational change in the healthcare payment system requires a knowledgeable staff, strong administrative skills, and a comprehensive reporting to the federal government. And with the upcoming changes in the executive branch, it's unclear if the commitment to make the system changes necessary a success will exist. And that's one of the things that, you know, are we capable of changing to this system? Is the state capable of changing to this system? And that is what is being sort of questioned by the Joint Fiscal Committee. Will the state, will the requirement, and it's significant in terms of work and operational changes for the state, including IT changes, massive IT changes, by the way, will, is it clear that the state is ready to make these technological changes and in time to ensure that those changes are made? Remember, this is a 5-year waiver, and it is something that is going to be interesting. You know, the independent doctors came out saying yesterday, let's put a hold on this. Let's try to resolve the many questions that are still being raised about this all-payer. And some believe this model may saddle providers with an added layer of bureaucracy if the accountable care organizations, and that's what's going to be developed here, is an organization that sits in between the providers and the payers. If that ACO isn't properly structured, they believe, the independent doctors believe, it's just another bureaucratic, another bureaucracy in an already bureaucratic system. So you know what? I don't see that Bruce Bouchard is calling in right now. So if you've got questions on the direction we're going with healthcare in the nation, in our state, give me a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-825. If you've got a question, a concern, a comment, give us a call, and we'll take your calls when I come back. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. In a moment, we'll talk healthcare. Healthcare in Vermont, healthcare nationwide. There seems to be in flux. Today, the Green Mountain Care Board will discuss and possibly vote on implementing the all-payer model in terms of how we are going to reimburse providers here in Vermont. It requires a lot of things going on all at once. Requires the approval of a waiver, which the Green Mountain Care Board is doing with the federal government in order to implement this. It requires a what is called an accountable care organization, which is a establishment of an organization in between the payers and the providers to help in terms of managed care and some other things. By the way, the independent docs have said if that isn't designed right, it just becomes another bureaucracy. They also are worried about the reimbursement, especially primary care doctors, since they are the ones that are going to be a major factor in making sure this all-payer model works, the reimbursement factor to primary care docs. So let's go to the phone line. Healthcare in Vermont and the nation. Let's talk to Gail in Calais. Gail, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mike, and thanks for taking my call. I will try to be calm about this and brief. Some of you know this is a very, very passionate subject for me, both professionally and personally. When your program came on this morning, I was just finishing some comments on Vermont Digger about this subject, and it was interesting reading other comments. I am very, very concerned that this administration and the Green Mountain Care Board are going to see fit to pass this during this administration. And I don't know what we as individuals can do to stop it, but please, people need to understand what managed care is. And it is not benefiting quality of care. And when you mention the word bureaucracy, yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail, for your call. Let's go to the town of Lincoln. I haven't got your name, but you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. It's Owen. I'm a recent retiree, and I have not been able to find an answer to these questions concerning the Medicare waiver. How does it affect Part C, which is the Advantage plans? How does it affect Part D, the prescription plans, and how does it affect the Medigap supplemental plans that are available? Will those be available under this plan, under the waiver? These supplemental plans or accountable care are all based on fee-for-service. How are they going to dovetail into all-payer? There's been no discussion about this, and it's something that concerns me deeply.
Those are very good questions, Owen. Thank you for calling. I think the retort to that is nothing would change unless Medicare changes it, obviously. There has been talk about Medicare changing the way that it's going to be doing reimbursements as well in terms of whether this will dovetail into what we're doing here. Those are very good questions. And some of the things that most seniors have been very concerned about is what impact will this have on Medicare? Now, if you talk to Al Gabay, who's been on this program, who has talked about this, he says this will have no impact on sort of benefit level or anything that sort of affects you at the Medicare level. But, you know, those are good questions, Owen, that I think we need to address specifically when we have Al Gabay back. Let's go to Rob in North Carolina. Rob, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Yeah, Mike, the problem with healthcare is so expensive, especially in the United States. Our country spends more money per patient than any other country by far when you compare it to a lot of countries like Australia, Canada, France. So I think, Mike, we, as much as I don't like to say this, I think we're going to have to start revisiting and visiting again single payer. It's out of control. I mean, we don't have to, people can't afford it. Look at Obamacare. It was sold on a lie that you could keep your doctor if you like your doctor, and that the price of health insurance will go down on average $2,500 a year, I think it was, Mike. So we have people at the top, the very top, like the president, who can't speak the truth to us. Kind of tells you, I hate to say it, Mike, but it seems like a rigged system with pharmaceuticals and so on. My nephew, he works at a pharmaceutical, and I hear things from him about, you know, price gouging and things that he won't say publicly, but he works out in Ohio. He's the chief research, one of the chief research scientists at this pharmaceutical. And he had an operation, a heart operation recently up in Cleveland. And the operation went an hour and a half. You know what the bill was, Mike?
Probably in the multiple thousands of dollars.
$70,000, okay? And unfortunately, they botched the operation because they forgot one critical point. Was my nephew allergic to one particular medicine they had to give before? And you know what? He was allergic to it. They almost lost him on the table, Mike. So for $70,000, they botched, and he had to go back a second time at a different hospital because he didn't like what had happened there at the Cleveland Clinic. And he successfully had an operation. He's okay now. So after $150,000, Mike, which out of pocket he had to pay approximately $12,000, it's ridiculous, Mike. There's something going on here. We need honest people in government. We need hospitals to get more engaged and disclose what they're paying. We need disclosure, Mike. That's what's going to fix things.
Thanks a lot, Rob. And, of course, we had Tim Ash in here, who's a senator who sits as chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and he said the same thing as Rob. We need better disclosure. We need better sort of a handle on what our costs are and for each procedure. And those things sort of are database-driven, and maybe we need a better database in terms of what we're doing with health care. So the question is, should the Green Mountain Care Board pass the all-payer waiver? I want to be fair on this. I mean, there are some advantages to the all-payer waiver. There's no doubt that revamping the way that we pay for healthcare, look, it's long overdue. And a single payment, one payment coming to providers, is so much easier than the current fee-for-service system. That's confusing to at least me, probably you, as well as to the providers. And the concept of preventative care designed to sort of mitigate chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease, which are very, very expensive, and therefore If you can mitigate those, you reduce future costs. It won't happen overnight. Probably going to take a generation. But it will have an impact on the cost of health care. And also, a system that eases the bureaucratic sort of burden on providers, that focuses on patient and not, so that the providers are not struggling with the payment and the administrative issues, you know, that's needed as well. But there are concerns that we really need to pay attention to in this all-payer waiver. And the reason that it's being pushed, according to the Vermont Green, according to advocates at least, and Al Gobay had mentioned this as well, is that they feel that the momentum will be lost once the election is over, that you're going to have a change in administrations in Washington, you're going to have a change in administration in Vermont, and that momentum, that buildup for the last 2 years or more on this particular issue will be lost. Now, will the momentum be lost? Perhaps. Will the initiative be lost? I'm not so sure. You know, that will be determined on the next president of the United States or the next governor. But one thing's for sure, a lot of people don't know what's going on here. And the Green Mountain Care Board has to be more proactive. Our the people that are supporting this has to be more proactive in deciding deciding and promoting what's going on. Hey, I want to thank our guest today, Kyle Madura, WCAX reporter. He's talking about the WCAX polls. I want to thank Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News and Kitty Falcone talking about Rad Girls Club redemption for the adoptable dogs. And like I said, two things that we'll do today from today's program. One is we'll have a segment tomorrow dealing on the comments David Zuckerman made about the Vermont Air National Guard. I'm sure he's going to have a comment coming out after today, because he seems to be getting a lot of pushback on those comments. And also, we'll try to reschedule Bruce Bouchard, the executive director of the Paramount Theater. Obviously, there was a mix-up in scheduling today. And, of course, I want to thank all of you. A lot of great calls today. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. What a glorious past we've had, but we're celebrating the future. 85 years, WDEV Radio. We're looking forward to this future. You're listening to WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, 98.3 FM from Montpelier, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Isle and Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. Thank you for all your phone calls. Have a great rest of your day.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at HBinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.